Welcome. This is Jean Maroney of Thinking Directions. And today we are doing a free webinar on Own Your Motivation, three keys to getting started instead of procrastinating. Now, motivation is the impulse to take action. I've chosen procrastination as the general impulse for you to listen to this. But really, everything we talk about is going to be for all kinds of motivational issues, not just procrastination. But what I find is that because the impulse to take action is associated with an emotional response, it tends to cause confusion for people who are rational. And so today I'm hoping to clear up some of those confusions and help you be able to own your motivation so you do get started instead of procrastinating. Now, full disclosure, this is a teaser call, meaning I give it for free to hope I can sell you something. And the thing I am hoping to sell you is my launch program, which starts on December 31st and runs for 8 weeks. So I will tell you a little bit more about that about halfway through the program. The way we have it set up here is we have three keys to talk about. The first one has a fairly significant exercise. The second one has a smaller exercise. The third one has an even smaller. And that should take about an hour, maybe a little more, but pretty close to an hour. Then we'll have a Q&A. The Q&A is nominally 15 minutes, but I'm willing to stay on if you have questions. And in the Q&A, you can ask about anything, including about the launch program or any other questions you have for me from things I've written or anything. So that's what our plan is for today. And let's see. And let's plunge in. So, as I said, the particular focus is procrastination, which is a little bit ironic because I don't like the term procrastination. I prefer to just think about it as you're delaying work for some reason. Now, if you want, we can talk about this more, but the thing that I object to about the term procrastination is it seems to build in the idea you shouldn't be doing what you're doing. And as you'll see by the end of this hour, I don't think you should ever jump to that conclusion. I think you need to investigate a little bit further. But it's the term everybody uses. So let's use it in order to talk about this problem, because there is definitely a problem. I went and looked for some statistics. Now, you can lie with statistics, but I'm curious. I found research that said how many hours employees typically waste during the workday. And this is pre-COVID, by the way. And I'm curious, which of these do you think it is? One, three, or five? If you're on video, you can raise fingers. One, three, or five? We've got two hands up. We've got five. We've got three. So it depends who you talk to. Salary.com claims it's 1 hour a day. VoucherCloud claims it's 5 hours a day. That was in 2016. Now, that's 5 years ago. I'm sure it's only gone up with COVID. A lot of time does get wasted just by procrastination and other things. And that is because, in general, we're not taught how to own our motivation. This is not something that is well understood. People kind of expect to be able to just, say they're going to do something and then want to do it. And that doesn't work. Motivation is not under your direct control. However, it is under your indirect control. It turns out that you can activate it, you can untangle it, you can deepen it. Those are all things you can do that indirectly will trigger you to get going. So it's a big topic, and today we're going to focus on some really practical advice that you can use right away. And that first piece of advice, the first key to getting started instead of procrastinating, is give contrary motivation a fair hearing. Give contrary motivation a fair hearing. Don't assume, well, I'm procrastinating, therefore I shouldn't be doing this, I should be doing that. No, ask yourself, well, what's going on here? If you are tempted to do the wrong thing, meaning go off and eat potato chips instead of do your work, or you are resisting doing the right thing, meaning you are actually sitting at your desk, but you're just, you have that, it's like you're growling and sitting there not wanting to do it. Don't just shut that down and say, well, that's bad. You need to hear both sides of the story. And there's a very simple reason for why you need to hear both sides of the story. I got this from my husband, Harry Vinswanger. He is my Harry. He's a philosopher, and as he says, thoughts and feelings come from the same database. You only have one source of information to generate feelings and to generate the thoughts you're having about what you should do. I think the real distinction between thoughts and feelings that's relevant here is that feelings are less articulate. They are less clear. They are, and as a result, they're a little bit more difficult to, it's a little bit more difficult to judge them as to whether they're true or false, right or wrong, relevant or irrelevant. So the fact that you're feeling some conflict between thought and a feeling doesn't mean you know exactly what's going on. Don't assume you know what's right and what's not right. Give contrary motivation a fair hearing. Now, to do this, I'd like to offer a very simple tactic, which I call the AND list. And I'm playing a video for those of you who are audio only. I'm now playing a video of my doing an AND list in my journal. This was a real situation that came up. I needed to do a video of an AND list, and an AND list came up, so I just turned on the video recorder and did it. And as it, the, for those who are watching the video, I don't write that fast. It has been sped up, I believe, 4 times. So I write fast, but not that fast. But if you look at it, it's basically, it's one page. It starts with the words, I am ambivalent. And then I write the capital letters, and I really want some soda. So I was trying to not drink soda anyway. And I just went, I had, I think it's like 7 ands. And then by that, I'd given contrary motivation a fair hearing. And I reached a conclusion, and I actually convinced myself to do what it is I needed to do in that moment. Now, I the reason I have that video is because I want you to get the idea that this is something that's simple, that's easy. It just takes a page. You can do it when you want to drink soda and you don't think you should be drinking soda. It can be that simple and easy. So this is something I hope you will put in your back pocket. It is a 3-minute tool you can use anytime you're in conflict. Let's go through the steps. Now, I didn't make a big fuss about this at the beginning, but let me do it now. There is a handout for today's class, and Steph had put the link for it in the chat. I'm going to put it one more time, because if you joined after she put it in there, actually, Steph, can you just put it in again? Because I can't seem to do it in 2 seconds. If you join after she put it in, you won't see it there. But it was also in the email that you got. And it's just a little 2-page handout. It's got an outline that I'm following pretty religiously. And on the back of it, it has an exercise with all the instructions for the AND list. And I would like to go through these instructions, because we're going to do this exercise. This is a great little tactic. If you've never done it before, it's worth learning. If you've done it before, it's worth doing one more time. So you see the instructions at the top. Use this tactic when you aren't instantly motivated to do what you should be doing, and or you want a simple decision process. So it's going to help anytime you're in conflict, not just when you're procrastinating. So you need something. Of course, the first thing you're going to need, and start thinking about it now, you're going to be doing this exercise. You need something that you're ambivalent about to think about. Could be something that you need to do tomorrow morning that you don't want to do. Larry was saying that he sometimes doesn't have motivation to do, this is before we started the call, sometimes doesn't have motivation to do certain things. Okay, that might be a great thing to do an AND list on. You want something that you actually feel some conflict about. Don't use this exercise if you're not in conflict. There's no reason. Just go do the thing you need to do. The second step, make an AND list. And I've got a slide up here that matches the handout here. And I'm just going to go through it. I am ambivalent. I always start with the words, I am ambivalent. Now, you could say, I am conflicted. You could say, but don't say, I am procrastinating, or I am not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Start with something that is neutral. I am ambivalent doesn't say you know what it is that you should be doing. You're trying to give contrary motivation a fair hearing. So start by being fair and saying, you know, I'm not exactly sure what's going on. Okay. Then On each line, you start a sentence with the word and you put down, you write and then you write something that you are feeling, thinking, or believing at this moment that reflects that that conflict that you're feeling. So I have here, and I should make that phone call. And I don't feel like it. And it's really tricky. And I wish it were over. And I'd rather get outside while it's light. Now that's completely right off topic. That's okay. We're just giving contrary motivation a fair hearing. And I need to figure out what to say in the call. Now that's way more on topic. You notice that was item number 1, 2, 3, 4. That was like item 7. Very common that item number 7 or 8 is way more helpful than items 1 through 6. And I would like to take a break. Okay, so I'm definitely having some aversion to doing this. Now, you don't always have just 7 or 8. I've had as many as, say, 20. But this is something that you can write down. You're just basically blurting out on paper, one sentence at a time with an and, all your different contradictory motivation. If you need some help on that, I have a bunch of words on this page. Should, can, might, will, want to, don't want to, shouldn't, have to, won't. Any of these words can help you pull out the motivation that you're actually feeling right now. The reason for doing this is you're trying to take the feelings and put them into words. You need to get all of the feelings into thoughts so you can evaluate them. And when you put them down on paper, that is one of the best ways to do it. You can also do it by talking it through with someone. You've probably done this many times. You were feeling conflict over something, so you called up a friend or talked to your spouse or someone you know, said, can I talk this through with you? And you just kind of blather out your conflicted motivation. At the end of it, it's obvious what you should do. Well, this is a private 3-minute way to do this without having to find someone else. If you put it on paper, works very well. Now, why do you think I put the and in capital letters? Anyone want to hazard a guess on that? You can unmute and shout it out if you have it.
I think it's true. Go ahead.
Larry first and then Richard.
Okay. I think it makes it clear that there's a choice.
There's a choice. Well, there's a choice, and that you really are inviting all of these different things. And this is contradictory.
Good. Right. Mm-hmm.
Richard, did you want to add something to that?
It's really the same comment. I mean, you start out with, I am ambivalent. Yeah. And then, okay, the ands are, okay, these are the various feelings, thoughts that are, as to which I am in conflict.
Yes, exactly. And it's embracing them by saying and, not but, right? If you said but every one of these, you would be rejecting each of the thoughts as it came. What you actually want to do is you want to embrace them all. Okay, then the last thing you do is you write down your takeaway. Now, when do you write down your takeaway? When you've run out of the and list, you kind of look at it and you say, well, like in this particular case, the obvious thing was, I didn't know what to say on this phone call. And so my takeaway was, I need to spend a few minutes figuring out what to say on the call, because I think the resistance I'm feeling is due to uncertainty about what to say. And that'll make the difference. If you can figure out a next step, you have solved the problem. If you can figure out a next step to take, you have resolved the conflict sufficiently enough for now, because when you take that step, the world changes. New things, you get new information, and that is good enough. You do not have to solve all the problems in the world. If you are feeling conflict, all you need to do is figure out a good next step, and you'll be free of the conflict and able to move forward. Any questions about this tactic, this and list tactic? I'm not seeing any hands up. I'm not seeing any questions in the chat. So let's do this exercise together. So I need all of you to come up with either, it could be something you need to do this afternoon after this that you think you're going to procrastinate on. It could be something you're feeling conflict about right now. Get to pick something. Does anyone need help picking something to do this exercise on? Was that a raising hand, Jack? I think it is. Why don't you unmute and we'll talk about it?
Well, you know, I'm retired.
Okay.
I don't usually do much of anything.
Well, does that bother you? Does that bother you, sir? Is there something you wish you were doing?
Well, no, I'm retiring.
It's fine that you're retired, but why did you come to this class? If you're completely satisfied with how everything's going, why'd you come to this class?
Well, it's free, one thing.
Yeah, but it takes, so you're just trying to be entertained. Well,
okay. Yeah.
All right, Jack. So here I'm going to suggest something to you. If you just took this class, even though the topic had no relevance to your life right now, I bet that you're slightly ambivalent about how to entertain yourself and what would be the most entertaining thing you could do with your time. So
I was going to say I'm more ambivalent about whether I should be productive at all.
All right. Do the am list on whether I should be doing something productive. Great idea. I knew you had something that you were ambivalent about. Everybody does. That's completely normal. Thank you for asking that, Jack. Okay, then I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to do an am list with you. Let's all do an am list. It will be about 3 minutes of silence. And then we'll come back and we'll discuss it.
Please pause now to do the exercise.
So let's what I'd like to do is debrief on this. Let's see. Let's go to the debrief slide. I think that there's a big benefit to getting your thoughts off your mind onto paper. I think that's essential. And I'll just to warm it up, I'm going to share what I did. And I'm not sure I entirely followed the rules, which is maybe a good demonstration that the purpose is to figure out the problem, not necessarily follow all the rules. I am ambivalent about working after class. So I know I'm going to be tired after we finish this. And I have about an hour of administrative work that I'd like to do. And I know I'm going to be ambivalent. And I have things I need to do. And I will be tired. And I really have to get that done. And I shouldn't say have to. I'm really giving myself a hard time. And I'll be tired. And I'm repeating myself. And I guess I see it as an either or. And why can't I take care of myself? And I wish I could do, I think it's the admin. And what if I put a boundary on? That's a tech I have. And maybe I could identify why it's important. And I guess I want myself to see that it's important. And I want to be able to work on little stuff later in the day. And that, you know, this is wildly subjective. You have no idea what I'm talking about. You don't have to know what I'm talking about. An am list is for you to clarify your own conflict. But that little am list actually did clarify it for me. And what I wrote as my takeaways, I will gently work, giving myself work with self-awareness and make a 3-point plan for that hour. And that was actually very helpful to me. I think this will help me jump into action after this call is over. So I'd be interested to hear how it went for others on the call. Did you find it helpful? Was it not helpful? Did you get an insight? Anything you saw? Richard, you had something you wanted to comment on?
Without going too deeply into the details, which I could do, but would take some time, I found the exercise helpful. I don't know what the resolution of it is going to be, but I got 5 ands down. And I could say something about them.
Well, so actually I'd be very interested if it's not too private. I think it's actually really helpful to talk about a real example.
Okay. It is not at all private.
Mm-hmm.
I had a 2021 New Year's resolution, a list of them.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. Some of them were, you know, things like, keep up the good work with your budget and your time management. You know, as I keep up
maintain.
The good
work, it's yeah.
easier ones. Okay. I had one that was hugely ambitious, which was privatize retirement planning in America, meaning do something about it. Okay.
Okay.
I've been talking to people about this for years, like one by one by one by one by one, retail, okay? And I make my argument, Social Security runs out of money 13 years from now. The trustees of the system will tell you that.
Okay.
Add 13.
Okay, good. I think we got the context. What showed up on your and list?
Okay. Okay, concrete step. Right to former speaker.
Wait. Okay. I'd like you to read your and list. I think that'd be super helpful.
I will. I am ambivalent. And I want to take a concrete step. And I think I am wasting my time on this. And I have practical needs closer to home. Like,
you don't have to explain. Just write
okay,
what you say. What you wrote.
Going. Mm-hmm. Just keep going. And another way of saying, similar to the previous one, I have other values closer to home: a family, daughter, a son-in-law, a granddaughter, her education.
Yeah. Just read it. We don't have to totally understand.
I am.
Oh, you did. Okay. Great. Terrific. Sorry, Richard. Yeah. Great.
And I need time for my health, workouts, food preparation, and that's as much as is written.
Okay, great. So what you did is you wound up showing your major values, right? You have this, you're afraid you're wasting your time, you have these values, you have this, you have these demands on your time. This is a classic issue of, to tell you the truth, this is a classic issue of needing something to integrate your values in life. And I'll tell you, some of you may have heard, I gave a talk on how to set and apply a central purpose at the Objectivist Conference this summer. And that talk, it's not the transcript, it's the script for it, has been expanded and it's going to be the next four articles in my newsletter. And one of the things I talk about is how a central purpose is important if you're retired to still organize your life, but it needs to be a small amount enough time so that it can fit with the fact that you want to spend time with your grandparents, you want to take care of your health, you have a number of medical appointments. And so it needs to fit in that, and it needs to, and I'll tell you the other thing it needs to do is it needs to make progress. So the conflict that you're describing there, Richard, is a really known kind of conflict. It looks to me like the and list clarified the issue for you, but didn't help you solve it. This sometimes happens with the and list, right? The and list is a 3-minute tactic. Go ahead.
I don't agree that it didn't help me solve it.
Oh.
It's already framing my thinking in a certain direction.
Yes, I didn't mean to say it didn't help you solve it. I mean, it's not done.
It's not done.
Right.
It is not done.
And so that is the thing that happens with an and list when it's a really big issue. 3 minutes helps you see the scope of the issue and you know what? I need something bigger to deal with this. But so that's great. So I encourage you to read the four articles on central purpose because I hope that they will help you with this exact conflict. That's what a central purpose helps with.
And I can be specific how this helped.
I'd love to hear that.
I have never articulated exactly why is it that it's now December 2nd and through all of those 11 months, I never did anything on this particular resolution. What were the exact reasons why?
Okay. Yeah. Well, and so do you mind if I give you some unsolicited advice?
Go to it.
The other thing is the statement of the goal was so big that it may not have seemed actionable to you. So the other thing you need to do, you can have a great, huge, long-range vision. But you need to bring it down to something that is actionable in the here and now. And that's
a
skill.
Concrete step.
Yeah.
I was going to write a letter to a particular person. I've never done it.
Right. Well, yeah. And I'd say concrete steps are needed, but they also need to be something that you think is not a waste of your time. And that is a goal setting issue, not just a figuring out a concrete step. Because figuring out something that you can do, that you actually believe you can do, and would have a material effect, is a creative problem-solving process. Great thing to do, but doesn't happen automatically. And I think that's, with goal setting, I think that's the big missing thing in goal setting is understanding that the visionary goal needs to be turned into meaningful shorter-term goals, not just concrete steps. Because otherwise, you can take 1,000 concrete steps and not have anything to show for it. And boy, will you be discouraged if you do that.
I think one other thing for me is I had a concrete step in mind. I've wanted to like define, okay, how much time am I willing to devote to this?
Yep.
But what keeps happening is the immediate problems of the day and the week and the month get into the way to this. That's right. That's the model that I'm in.
So you and everybody else, right? This is like a totally, like if I were going to, if the topic of this were central purpose, every single person on the call would have the exact same situation you're in. Because something like this doesn't happen. A long-term goal, a very long-term goal that requires creativity to even figure out what you do, doesn't happen unless you schedule time for it first. And that you won't schedule time for it first unless you've got your head around it. So this is a solvable problem. If you decide that you want to put this on your agenda for next year, this is a solvable problem, Richard, and I look forward to seeing what happens. Or you can also decide, no, this is not worth my time. Both of those would be fine things to do. Great. But thank you for sharing. I appreciate it. Steph, did you want to say something?
Well, I did this on my book because that's why I'm doing today's class for my book on tax that I'm dragging my heels. Mm-hmm. And I'll do a short version rather than read my whole list, right? The list started with, I would rather play my game. And it went through, there's a huge amount of stuff to do and it's undifferentiated, to realizing that if I made a list of the tasks and then said, okay, and then I'll do another and list to figure out what to do next, that calmed me and made me feel like, okay, I'm ready to go and take that small step.
Okay, great. This is a great example of how if you can just figure out what the next physical action is, you don't need to solve the rest of the problems. You can actually move forward. So great. I'm glad to hear it. So we have one example where the and list raised bigger issues and one where it actually helped kind of zero in. Great. Now, Ginger, I think I put your hand down by accident. So I think you were next. Did you want to have a question or comment?
Yes, I found something interesting here. I made a pretty long list of ands. Mm-hmm. I'm ambivalent about actually making a list. I have a huge list of things to do. And okay. I was really ambivalent about it. Every time I approach it, I go eat. So I noticed that the first, I would say, 9 ands that I had nothing to do with the list. All had to do with, oh, I'd rather go eat. I'd rather go, you know, do this, do that, got to read stuff and stuff. And when I approached, so I didn't even approach the problem until like the 10th thing. And then finally I said, well, it's too hard to organize and it's too hard to figure out. And I don't have, let's see, what did I say? Wait a minute. Oh, I don't know how to get hold of it. And I'm afraid I'll have to do the stuff once I write it down.
Good to know.
Yes. Yeah.
So what did you conclude from this, Ginger?
I concluded that my problem is that I don't know how to sort the list. Excel
or something. Okay.
Yeah. So I could switch things around. But I haven't yet done that. And even that, I stopped and said, I wonder what kind of food I have left. Right. But I think my conclusion is that it just feels too big. Okay. I don't quite know how to get around that yet. But
I would take that really, really seriously, actually. I think one of the things that can really shut you down is having a to-do list that is so big you don't want to look at it. And there are several solutions to this, right? So one is you can pre-sort it. You can have a number of smaller lists. That works for me, is to have, you know, I think actually a maximum of like 7 items on a list works really well, which is why I actually use like index cards are super helpful. So right. Ginger happens to be in the thinking lab. So I'm going to say, go check up the hierarchical lists tactic in the thinking lab. Because I find that when there's just too much stuff, that making a hierarchical list with index cards, and I'll just describe it for everyone else. On the top card, you put the seven categories, and then each of the categories gets another card. And then you write the name of the category in the card, and then you do the breakdown of that. And some of those things may also have breakdowns, so they get another card. But at any time, you're only looking at seven things, and you can actually very quickly, you can actually get it under control in your head much more quickly, I find, with index cards. Now, some people, you know, the younger generation is really comfortable with computers and having different screens, and they have a lot of real estate. And for me, it does not work to do this on the screen. It really helps to have index cards so you can only look at one card at a time, or you can lay all the cards out on the desk at the same time. But that's something that if you're a digital native, you may have a digital native equivalent of this to do. Is that helpful, Ginger? I think she's nodding. Okay, yeah, great.
Thank you, yes.
Sure. Susan, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I did. I got, you say the purpose of this AND list is to give contrary motivation a fair hearing. Mm-hmm. But about halfway through the list, it started seeming more like, how am I going to talk myself into doing what I'm supposed to do?
Okay.
The difference. It's not balanced anymore. And I kind of lost, lost enthusiasm for the whole thing. I don't want to just talk myself out of.
Right.
That's not giving it a fair hearing.
That's totally not right. So the intention matters, right? That's true for any tactic. The intention matters. So why do you need talking into this, Susan? Is it okay? Is it not too personal?
No, it's not too personal. I'm ambivalent about sitting down and doing some budgeting paperwork.
Mm, okay.
And I've just been putting it off for days and days.
And why? Why don't you want to do it?
It's hard to get started because I know once I do get started, I'm good.
Okay.
I've got other things to do that seem more interesting.
So it's boring.
Mm-hmm. It's boring. It might take a long time to finish it.
Okay, so it's not just boring, it's you've got hours of boredom ahead of you.
Or I think I do.
Or you think
I probably do.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I feel a bit guilty that I shouldn't have let it go on so long because now it's going to take more time.
Okay. All right. So it's not only hours of boredom, but hours of self-recrimination during the boredom because it wouldn't be hours if you'd done it before. So we can really understand why you don't want to do this. Carry on.
That's as far as I got with the negatives. I decided to balance it. It might not be quite as bad as I think. And once I get it done, I'm certainly going to be happy to have it all under control again.
Let's really look at these negatives, though. So this is giving the fair hearing. So you're giving... You're giving the look at the positive hearing, right? Sounds like you gave the do it side, you gave a really thorough thing. Well, it may not take that long and it's going to have these benefits and it won't be so bad once I get started, all these things. Okay, so let's chew on the negatives also. So for example, the fact that you think it's going to take hours. So this, I mean, you've done this before, right?
And it takes hours because I leave it so long.
Right. So are we talking 2 hours, 4 hours, 10 hours?
4 or 5.
Okay. And you get to answer this. Do you think it's worth 4 or 5 hours? I mean, do you think the payoff really is worth 4 or 5 hours? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, and it's not, you don't really enjoy doing it while you're doing it.
Right. Yes, that's true.
So one thing is the actual quality of life while doing it could be better.
Right.
And you need to really take that seriously. Like, is there any way that you could make your quality of life while you're spending these 4 or 5 hours better?
I'm drawing a blank.
So
I mean,
I'm just
something like playing music while I'm doing it. That would I'm not sure I could do that. It'd be distracting.
So, I mean, I actually play classical music only when I have something like this. absolutely nothing with words, right? It's totally distracting. And it has to be a certain volume. It can't be too loud. It can't be too soft. But I find it helpful. Now, you know, then there may be something else like that. I don't know. I can definitely put on, one of the other things you had was you feel guilty that you put it off and so it takes so long. And I then predicted that you're going to get to have 4 or 5 hours of self-criticism. Is that a fair prediction?
I'm not sure it would last the whole time. I think once I get going, I kind of pay more attention to that.
Okay. Well, this is a quality of experience thing. Like, let's look at the self-criticism thing. Let's really justify, why didn't you do this before?
For all these same reasons.
And they're pretty darn good reasons, aren't they?
I think so.
Okay. So one of the things I wanted to make sure we talked about is you always have a choice. And one of the things that you are good in the trade-off here is it's something that you want to do and it has benefits and it has drawbacks. And like, if you actually did this, like 1 hour, is this something that if you did every month, it would be 1 hour every month? But if you do it once a year, it's 4 or 5 hours. Is this what it is?
No, it would be 1 hour if I did it once a week.
Oh, and how long has it been since you did it?
About 3 months.
So you can either put in 1 hour once a week, which is 12 hours, or you could suck it up and do 4 or 5 hours once every 3 months. Now we see even more clearly why you didn't do it every week. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay.
So this is might actually be the best way to do it. You make a little ghetto of time when you do this stuff so that you don't have to do it every week. And you could actually have the attitude of, you know what? I'm going to put on, I don't know what would be the thing for you. Sometimes it helps me to put on sloppy clothes to do something like this. I'm just making this up. And I'm going to do this. And while I'm doing it, I'm going to be so glad I didn't spend an hour every week for the last 3 months on this. I'm just making this up. But you see how we're really giving a fair hearing to your not having done it. There are some good reasons for why you didn't do it.
Well, I guess that was my original question. When you make a list like this, do you ever come out with, you know, what I thought I should be doing is not the only answer. Yes. Either I shouldn't be doing it or I could do it some other way. In other words,
or I don't have to. Absolutely.
It's not just I'm going to talk myself into doing this.
No, right. I mean, that's exactly the reason for giving. I'm really glad you raised this because that's exactly the reason for giving the contrary motivation a fair hearing. Because you don't know for sure what the truth is. And what you want to do is you want to make use of everything you know on this topic. And there's not only do you usually have blinders on, well, I have to do it this way, not you personally, but one often gets blinders on. But also there is one of the things, a context that needs to be held is that if you believe in rational selfishness, you really do have a choice here. You really could go without the budget. If it's not worth it, you don't have to do it. Now, if it's worth it, then it's worth it. And you will find, when you chew it enough, you will find ways that convince you that it's worth it. But if it's not worth it, you don't have to do it. And that's part of giving the contrary motivation a fair hearing is reminding yourself that it really is a choice. You get to do the thing that you think is best for you and in the full context. And if you really get clear on that, you'll be at least neutral about it. You may need a little nudge to get over a hump, but you'll be at least neutral if you get really clear on that. That's the best thing.
Okay.
Good?
Yeah, that helps.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thanks, Susan. Appreciate your sharing that. Okay, well, let's go on to the second key for getting started instead of procrastinating. And this is actually an incredibly fundamental point, which is to motivate by values, not threats. And if you keep in mind your examples from the exercise you just did, I think it'll be helpful because a lot of the things that show up on an AND list are negatives of things you don't want to have. And there's a generally poorly understood issue here about how do you resolve cases where there are positives you can go after and negatives you can avoid. And this is often discussed as the issue of motivation by love by or fear. I actually think it's much more objective to think of it as motivation by values versus threats. Because if you think of it as motivation by love versus fear, it sounds like it's a question of what emotions you want to go by. And what it really is what do you want the standard for deciding what you do to be? So that's what I want to, this is the second thing I want to talk about is always, I recommend in all situations, you motivate by values, not by threats. And the really simple explanation for this is this arrow diagram that I have put up. For those of you who have audio only, I have a picture of a carrot, right? That's the value, and a bunch of arrows going toward the carrot. So that would be motivation by values, is all arrows point toward the carrot. And then I have to the right of it, I have a picture of a bat. That's motivation by threats, like beat you on the head. And you want to get away from that, so all the arrows point away from the bat. So this is, and that's what you do. If you see something you like, you run and get it, right? If you think of an animal going to eat, it goes and chases, goes gets the food, or it chases after its mate, whatever. It goes towards something. If a threat comes, what do? You run away. And that could be in any direction. So this is the critical thing. Motivation by values involves having all of your action going toward a single end. Motivation by threats means your action goes every which direction. It's just away from something. It's not in any particular direction. And that turns out, for the long run, that matters a lot. And for humans, it's always the long run that matters. Now, an interesting thing about this motivation by values versus threats, if you just think about it in terms of love feelings and fear feelings, right? How does that get resolved if you have a mixture of feelings? Well, in animals, the way it gets resolved is literally by their perceptual ability to identify threats. If they see a threat, or they smell a threat, or they hear a threat, they run away. They immediately go into fear base, and fear trumps love. So I have a picture here on the screen of a little deer eating leaves. It's in motivation by love. It's hungry. It's eating leaves. Yum, 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 yum. And then something happens and boom, it's out of there. Motivation by threat. So in animals, it is just automatic. If a predator or some other threat gets within the perceptual range, the fear-based motivation takes over and just trumps the value-based motivation. And since I think evolutionarily, our motivational system is kind of built on what the animals is. That actually is interesting, because that kind of explains why things don't work so well for people. For us, we actually have a choice of how we get motivated. I mean, you really have a choice. Are you going to be motivated by values, and are the dominant feelings you have going to be joy, love, and desire? Or are you going to be motivated by threats, and the dominant feelings you have be fear, guilt, and misery? And here's the kicker. The default is motivation by threats, because as humans, we can be aware. We don't have any perceptual limit of threats. We can be aware of a hazard on the other side of the world. You know, just we got the news that there's a new variant of COVID in South Africa, which is thousands of miles away and is not an immediate threat probably to any one of you. And yet the stock market is taking effect. You know, people are doing things because we can project a threat that is thousands of miles away that is going to happen in the next week or month or year. And we can factor that in. And so if we just let the system operate without taking volitional control as to what is the standard by which we act, we are going to be motivated by fear. And that is what you see with unthinking people who do not take charge of their lives are predominantly motivated by fear. And that has gotten us into a number of predicaments. So what do you do about this? Because it doesn't mean you don't want to ignore threats. A threat is a fact, right? So there's another variant of COVID. You want to actually factor that into your life. the way that you do this as a rational thinking person is to understand, well, what is a threat? A threat is a threat to a value. What you really want to do is you want to take threats and understand them in terms of value. So you want to keep your attention on the values that you're after, understand the threats. They are kind of the terrain that you're in, but that you keep focused on what you want to get is the values. And for this, I find a golf course analogy is super, super helpful. Now, all of you, I assume, I actually have never played golf, but I think even I know enough about golf to make this golf course analogy. In case you are not familiar with it, you start with a little ball and you want to knock the ball into a hole, which is, you know, some, you know, hundreds of yards away. And between you and that little hole or to the side, there's rough grass and there's sand, which are called sand traps. And there are sometimes little ponds, which are called water hazards. And if you get your ball, when you're trying to hit it into that hole, into the rough grass, or you get it into the sand, or you get into the water, it's going to be a lot harder to get into the hole. So those are threats that are on the golf course. If you took the attitude, we've got to avoid the threats, no sand traps, what would you do? Well, the easiest way to do that is don't play golf. Don't play the game. You know, this, Ayn Rand talks about this, if threat is your standard, then, you know, living your life means accepting certain threats. You can't avoid all threats except by dying. That's basically how you can avoid threats. So if you want to play the game, you need to accept that the terrain has some threats in it, and you want to see how are you going to get your goal despite the fact there's some threats in the way. And you keep your mind on hitting the ball into the little hole and not getting all hung up on the water hazard or the sand trap. In fact, if you ask people about their golf game, what happens if they start worrying about the sand trap? They hit the ball into the sand trap. It's because that's what their attention is on. What you really need to be able to do is to keep a value orientation in whatever you're doing, not a threat-based orientation. And when you can do that, like in the case of maybe Susan's case is a good example, if she can stay focused on all the benefits of the budget and the benefits of not having spent a week every week for the last 12 weeks doing this, and you know, a few other things, it may be a lot easier for her to then do this budget work that she wants to do. It doesn't guarantee that you're not going to feel any fear or any discomfort, but it does mean that you're going to be doing what you're doing for a positive, rational reason, and that you're willing to accept the discomfort or the fear or whatever it is, that's kind of minor. Like when you play golf or when you play any game, you accept the idea you might not win. You might hit your ball in the sand, or, you know, you might have a bad stroke. That is part of what you're accepting when you play the game. So I think this is actually a really important issue, and I would love to talk about how you translate threats into values that need to be protected. So I'd love it if we have some examples from other people's ands list, or maybe we can do some of the same ones. Let's come up with some real cases where it seems like all you're really after is avoiding a negative. And let's talk about how to turn that into a positive. Do I have any volunteers for that? Guy, it looks like I have Guy as a volunteer. You want to unmute?
Hi, Jean. How are you?
Good. How are you?
So I just thought of this and I'll throw it out there. I'll spitball it and see if it works for this question. So when I'm up against a deadline, you've talked about this on your recent coaching calls, you're up against it, or a TLAB, you're up against a deadline and completion becomes the goal. And there is, and in reality, in my mind, I know it's actually a threat-based motivation because I can't wait to complete it. I can't wait for the sigh of relief.
Right. You just don't want to be doing this anymore. Right.
Right. Yeah. And I'm just so excited about potentially finishing it that then I get emotionally uncomfortable and then I have to distract myself. I'm too preoccupied with the idea of completing the assignment, getting it off my plate. And therefore that creates this tension and friction. And I can't actually concentrate because I'm so focused on what is really a threat-based way of trying to achieve it, which is focusing on getting it done, getting it out of the way.
Right. So it's just get it out of the way as opposed to, oh, this is a good task and I love it. There are things that I can get from this task. So can you give us a concrete example of some task that you might feel that on? Because this is a great example that unless you know what the task is, we can't figure out what the value is because it will depend on the different tasks.
So perhaps this is familiar with anyone who publishes, but it's, the idea is that I have to, you know, I've been given a task and I thought I could do it in the night and it requires analysis, probative work, and drawing important conclusions. And as I go through that process, it's unclear how long it'll take, and it's pushing longer, and I'm at the edge of knowledge, and I'm pushing step by step, and I get tired, and I focus on the idea of completion. And so this is more like deadline work around publishing anything, any creative project. So does that help? But that's basically what I've been up against. I'm up against that constantly, including last night, and something like that.
Yeah. And so, and this is a great example of what you're describing here. Like you're actually doing an analysis and in the middle of the analysis, you're thinking, you know what? I got to get this finished. I got to finish this analysis so I can decide what the conclusion is so I can publish it. And so this is actually distracting you from the analysis. So now what is the value of the analysis stage? Let's just talk kind of generally about the analysis stage.
Well, the value of the analysis stage is gathering a deep understanding of the likely future outcome of a particular set of circumstances.
Right.
And let's, in this case, it's financial markets. So
So it's gathering a lot of data so that you can actually make these predictions about what's going to happen, right?
So
and you need the data.
I'm deriving insights and knowledge from the data. I'm integrating it.
And so you need the raw data, right? So you really see the value of having a bunch of raw data, right?
Yes.
And you see the value of every insight that you get into it.
Yes.
And you see you need a whole bunch of these.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. And that process is getting cut short by thinking about what's going to happen in the next, and you can't really, so this is an example of something where you need to do in layers, right? You need to actually finish the analysis before you can then essentialize your predictions before you can write the report.
Yeah, I mean, it ends up happening really, as you know, concurrently where you create, you're seeing new insights and so I'm seeing new insights and therefore the work is taking on a bit of a life of its own, but I have a preset expectation of completing a project.
Right.
And it's pushing out and that creates pressure.
Right. So, which is actually our next topic, but let's talk about this specifically. So one thing is that, let's name a couple of the positives here. So one is you want to have, you want to be thorough, partly you want to be efficient, right? These are two values that you have. Right, the time pressure comes from wanting to be efficient.
The most important is to be thorough and to end up with work that is complete and as correct as I can make it.
Okay, so when you really look at it, is thorough versus quick, which are two values. When you really look at that, which one? It sounds to me like you say it's a no-brainer. Thorough is what matters.
Yeah, thorough, but really in the essentials. Not I need to figure out. Really keeping it to like the end goal.
Okay, great. So it needs to be on target. So not so between thorough and targeted.
Targeted.
So targeted is the thing. So you see, in just saying thorough but quick, quick isn't the issue, but thorough isn't exactly it. It's targeted. So what I really want to do is I want to be targeted in this analysis. Now let me ask you, Guy, if you are in the middle of this completion, you think, look, you know what? I really want to be targeted in this analysis. What do I need to target in this analysis? Do you think you could answer that question in the heat of the moment?
Yeah.
This is a great example of how giving contrary motivation a fair hearing helps you, in effect, reframe the issue. Because in this case, you're thinking it's just time versus quality. But when you really look at that, you told me it's not thoroughness. It's it needs to be targeted. And that comes out of this meta-level analysis that you just did. And in fact, I'm just going to mention to you, you know, this, I've been writing about a three-point plan recently. I did a class on it and I wrote an article about it. Three-point plan helps in this situation very much, where you really say, well, look, I need to do this now. I need to cover these things. I need to reach these conclusions. And then I'm ready to go on, or something like that. And that is a tactic that you can use that can help target your effort to make sure that you are using the time in the way that you want to use the time, and that the value that you want is really clear front and center at that moment. Is that helpful?
Very helpful. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, great. Does someone else have one that they want to do? Let me just give a quick pitch for the New Year launch. The New Year launch is an 8-week program that you get daily emails from me with thought work to do. And then there are 2 coaching calls a week. And there is some coursework to do with it. But most basically what happens is you set your own goal. It's called you decide your initiative and you set a goal, and then you get coaching to help you do it. And it's these kinds of issues. How do you actually translate the threats into values? How do you actually maintain that value orientation? How do you untangle things that are going? You can do all this by yourself, and it's very helpful to get coaching. So I encourage you to look into that. You will, of course, in the email you get from me, you will get a link so you can read the whole sales page on that. But that's really what the launch is for, is to get coaching. So if you have something you want to get started on in January, I'll tell you, I think the people in the program would agree with me. Every single person who regularly attends the coaching calls makes amazing progress in the 8 weeks. And it's like wildly inspirational to see what everyone has been doing. So, but we're going to go on. We have a third key to talk about, and it actually ties in to the it ties into the issue of pressure, which Guy was bringing up. Now, he's heard me talk about this, so you may not have appreciated part of what he's saying. I think people are very confused about pressure. And the way that people try to get things done is by pressuring themselves to do it. It seems like pressure, like there's an external deadline pressure, or there's an external social pressure or something like that. But the way to think about pressure is that you are creating the pressure. You, the feeling of pressure is you shutting out thoughts or feelings that you think you can't think about or you shouldn't be feeling. That is what the feeling of pressure is caused by. It's actually you suppressing things. So you're using actually part of your operating equipment to keep things out of mind. Now, I am like totally opposed to this. I think this is a terrible thing to do. And so I want to just break it down a little bit. This is why I'm opposed to having the rule be just do it. Just do it no matter how you feel. That is what creates the pressure. Now, I want to be honest here. The reason people are tempted to do this is that they are feeling overload. And if you just shut a bunch of things out of your mind, it can feel like it reduces the load so you can do things. And people do get things done sometimes by just shutting it all out and just doing it. But it has a real toll. It has a huge toll. Because the way that pressure works is you shut yourself off from information, you are literally cutting off important value information. The kinds of things that we drew out, like Guy realizing what he needed to do was to target his stuff. Or Susan, one of the things I drew out from her is she actually saves about half the time by doing this once every 3 months instead of every week. You know, things like that. That information is going to be critical for you moving forward and being happy with it. And you completely cut yourself off from it. The other thing is pressure is uncomfortable and unpleasant, and it stokes fear. It's basically a threat-based kind of activity to take. it is going to associate this important work that you think is so important that you have to not think about anything else and just do it. It's going to associate that with fear and misery, and you're going to not want to do it in the future. So I'm really opposed to just pressuring yourself to get things done. And having said that, you do need a way to be able to act rationally when you don't really feel like it. My advice is don't make yourself stupid in that situation, which is what happens. You're basically reducing your crow space. What you need to do most importantly when you are in that pressure field situation is make sure that you maintain your mental functioning. You want to have a clear head where you are assessing what are your options. You have some feelings about it, but they are not overwhelming feelings. You can really see why you're feeling what you're feeling, and you can make a free choice as to what you're going to do. The test of rationality is not that you take some preconceived action that you decided at some point was the logical thing to do. The test of rationality is, do you keep your mind functional so that you are able to see the options and choose what is best for you? And pressure makes your mind not functional. So how do you maintain this mental functioning? The thing you need rather than pressure is what I'm going to call emotional resilience. And this is, again, this is an introduction to a big topic. But what emotional resilience is it's the ability to regain mental functioning when you become triggered or overloaded. So if you get like freak out because, oh my God, that list is so long, like Ginger was talking about, or appalled that, oh, I don't want to do this budget stuff, or feeling incredible pressure. Can you recover? This is what emotional resilience is about, is you say, oh, hey, I just got into this state. Let me take a couple of steps backwards and regain functioning. And there's sort of three parts of that. There's the poise part. I mean, literally breathing can help you in this situation. Breathing puts you in the here and now. I mean, literally, when you apply pressure to yourself, you typically tense up and you get less oxygen. So it sounds like silly advice, but is actually mentally helpful. Second thing, what I call grounding yourself, which is the emotional side. Now, this, you need to know introspective techniques to do this. You need to take whatever feelings you have and be able to turn them into values at stake. Again, not a trivial skill, but it is a learnable skill. My freebie, probably all of you have my freebie, which is the Thinking Direction Starter Kit. I've got some information on basic emotional introspection skills there. And then the third thing you need to be able to do is clear your head of overload. So you need to have your body, your emotional system, and your cognitive system all need to be functional. So you need to breathe. You need to have dealt with the alerts and figured out what the values at stake are. And you have to have your mind functional, which often means you need to reduce overload and get things off onto paper. And this little AND list, one of the reasons I taught you the AND list, it's a multi-purpose tactic. It will get you to pause, might remember to breathe. It will get you to get those feelings out, can help you to maybe ground yourself some, and it gets it on paper so you have a little more mental bandwidth to decide. So that's a learnable skill, and that is the third key, I would say, to owning your motivation. Just to refresh your recollection, give contrary motivation a fair hearing. All that data comes from one database. Thoughts and feelings come from the same database. It's all your selfish interests and maybe your mistakes, and you need to untangle it. You need to get a fair hearing. Motivate by values, not threats. This is, as human beings, we can be long range. We need to be value oriented. That's how it's going to add up to something over the long range. And finally, use emotional resilience, not pressure, to take a step despite contrary motivation. I hope that this is helpful for you. I would love to answer other questions. I'm happy to stay on the line to answer questions until they run out. But in any case, I hope this has given you some ideas about how to own your motivation. And as I said, I'd be delighted if anyone is interested in joining the launch that starts December 31st. It's going to be fantastic. I I guarantee it. And for those of you who have been in a previous launch, I'm right in the middle of upgrading all of the materials. So we have a define an initiative document, and I've got a new piece of that, which is how you put boundaries on your work time so that you can really work in time blocks. And I'm very excited about that. The newsletter from last weekend was on that. And I also, there's an emotional resilience tool, and I have figured out a way to upgrade that emotional resilience tool. So it's going to be, it's going to be the 2022 version of the launch program. It should be really terrific. All right. Any questions about anything? Questions about owning your motivation? Questions about the launch program? Questions about something I wrote about my newsletter? Go ahead and raise your hand.
There is my
name. Richard, did you have a question?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have a series, and I'll take them one by one just to make sure everybody
gets
it.
Totally fine.
You had a slide up there about, in the new course, you're going to give an opportunity to work on an 8-week goal. Mm-hmm. Can you give me an example of what is a realistic as an 8-week goal? One, two, three, what are examples?
Well, I mean, so this is actually the very first thing, the define an initiative task that you do on Thinking Day on December 31st. Is you take your vision, like your vision is privatize retirement, right? Yes. Which is not something that's going to get done in 8 weeks, right?
No, but you could take a concrete step. You could say,
right
to this person. So
you need to bring it down. And how easy it is going to depend very much on you. Like, so I would say, I think I need to talk to you more about that particular thing to give you advice on that. But let me give you, I'm working on one right now. So my initiative right now is to get so that I can write 7 days a week for 3 hours, and that the writing, I have a lot of ups and downs in my writing. This has been a 30-year undertaking to get so that I can write, and I can write, but there's a lot of emotional ups and downs. And so my goal is to get so that I can write that period of time and it doesn't impact all the other things I need to do, which is pretty kind of amorphous. Well, my 4-week goal was, and I have that spelled out. My 4-week goal just looks at one piece of that. I want to try to get 7 days in a row where I actually write in the writing time, and the writing angst is during the writing time. Now, this doesn't mean I get everything else done. It doesn't mean the other stuff moves around it. So you see, it's only one aspect of it. But if I could get the writing on 7 days a week and the angst in the 3-hour blocks, that would be, my reaction to that would be, oh my God, I've broken the back of this problem. Now let me look at the rest of it. Now for me, that was a realistic goal. That might not be a realistic goal for someone else. So for example, someone else who was looking at writing, we have other people working on book projects, it might be that what they needed to do was just find the time of day, like in their first 2 weeks, say, they would find the time of day that they write well. Like, I happen to know I need to write first thing. Some people write late in the day, and they might actually have their 2-week goal be to figure out which time of day is best for writing and how many hours I can write at a time. And that would be and if they could get that solved in 2 weeks, they would absolutely be on the way to being able to have a writing process. So that's an example that's not yours. Now yours, I think it definitely, you'd need to bring it back to something that was some tangible result. And for you, I don't know if it would be a persuasion, a communication goal, like, or if it would be an actual people changing their mind about how they do something. I don't know what the tangible thing is. I talked to you about that. Actually, maybe we should just take 2 seconds and do that. What would you count as success?
Something written, I think, would be the way to break it down.
Oh, like a manifesto. Oh, to have a manifesto. Yeah. And so then part of the question would be, what do you think you could do? And part of the thing I have people do in the launch program is I make them set a 4-week goal. Because particularly if it's something that you haven't worked on, part of the problem is going to be working on it regularly and doing stuff. And if you run into trouble fitting it into your life, if you set a 4-week goal, you're more likely to get it done in 8 weeks. And so we actually put in protections to make sure you finish, which I think is very important. I think setting goals that you can't succeed at is totally demoralizing and a disaster. So that's part of the thing. In the first day, on Thinking Day on December 31st, I get everybody to run their, I get them to do this handout, go through this handout, decide what their initiative is and what their major goal is, and then run it by me, because I want to vet it and make sure that we agree. We both agree. This is something that you can do. And if you do it, oh my God, you will be so excited that you have made progress. Because that's the other part of it, is you could also make up something that you think you could do in 4 weeks, and it's just a slog. It's like, write 200 letters about this, and your test is 50 the first week, 50 the second week, 50. Oh my God, that would be so awful. What a horrible goal that would be. I wouldn't let you do that. I would want you to actually set a goal where when you finished it, your reaction would be, oh my God, this is actually a real positive step. I have seen objective progress toward my goal. Is that helpful?
It is helpful. The one thing I would pick out of everything that you said, and it makes total sense to me, you can't have your, in regard to what I'm doing, you cannot have the objective to be, I will persuade this person. It's, I will present my argument.
Yes, I think that's definitely true. It needs to be something that's actually under your control.
Right.
And that's right. So now I'll tell you one other thing about the launch program. I mean, I have in the Thinking Lab, I have classes called Just-in-Time Planning and Planned Evolution to teach this method of taking a big goal and bringing it back to something that basically 2 weeks, I think, is really the key. If you think you can get something significant done in 2 weeks, and you can keep taking the big thing and bringing it back to a 2-week goal that you can really do, you can do anything. You can do absolutely anything. And that's a skill. And I learned that as an engineer. That's what, that's the engineering approach. That's lean, if some agile are basically just-in-time planning. But that's a skill that takes some time to learn. One of the benefits of the launch program is I just coach you on that instead of your having to have the skill independently.
Well, we're on this. Mm-hmm. Talking this through, and I'm thinking about an 8-week goal, and I can make sense of it.
Yes, good.
And I can think for myself, particularly 8-week goal. The problem that comes to my mind is that one about the daily problems of life crowding out the 8-week goal. And if you had anything to say about that, it's helpful.
This is actually part of also figuring out what your 4 or 8 week goal is. As I make you figure out what else you're going to be doing the next 2 months. And how much time do you actually think you have for this? And when do you think you're going to do it? And what is it going to push out? Because if you haven't been working on this, if this is a new goal and you haven't been working on it, you had been doing something during that time. It might have been, you know, lolling on the couch, or it might have been playing with your grandchildren. I don't know what it was. But if you put in, say, 10 hours a week on this project, or 5 hours or whatever it is, that is going to come from something else. And that needs to be identified up front, because that is going to be a source of conflict. And one of the great, there are kind of three things you can do to increase your motivation to do a project that is not already naturally motivated. One thing is to activate motivation. So this is something that's important to you, and you can think about why it's important, and that will get you a little bit of motivation right now. The second thing you can do is untangle contradictory motivation. And why and what is more important in this context? And that needs to be done one at a time, and you need to do that based on values, not threats. And then the third thing that you need to do sometimes is you need to deepen the value. And that means really figuring out, wow, I've got some, if you have real resistance to something, you need to figure out in a deeper way why, even though you have a whole bunch of baggage about this and don't want to do it, you actually think it's important to do it. And you basically wind up doing it becomes a personal growth issue, that it's that important to you that you're willing to deal with the baggage. And this is one of the things we do. And I said there are emails every day. There's like a predictable, people who've been in the launch program will say there's a really predictable pattern. In the first week, you figure out when you're going to do the work. And then in the second week, you find out whether you're really motivated to do the work. And then in the third week, and this is what the emails are about, In the third week, you find out what it's conflicting with. And so the email each day is to help you think about the predictable problems you're going to have at this phase of the 8-week program. And then later on, it's old baggage, because like if you miss your 4-week deadline, you start feeling bad about the fact you missed your 4-week deadline and you have an old baggage comes up. So that's one of the things that you get in this program.
This is very helpful as you're talking that through, and I'm maybe feeding back to you something that you just said. I'm thinking at the very beginning of the 8 weeks, as I'm worrying about this problem of crowding out.
Yes.
Daily problems are crowding out the major thing I want to get done over the next 8 weeks. Start out with this in the beginning. Identify specific things that you anticipate will crowd out. And for example, for me, okay,
yeah.
Healthy food, healthy eating is important to me. So it means I have to put in a certain amount of work in the kitchen, preparing food and cleaning up after preparing food. Okay. Right. What's my strategy for dealing with that? Well, gee, it's not close to home, but there's a great, wonderful supermarket. It has a fantastic salad bar. You can get a healthy meal off of that. And it's total convenience. You know, it comes right in a plastic box and that's all there is to it.
Right. You throw it away afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You can problem solve. You can contingency plan and problem solve. Exactly.
Problem solving.
Exactly.
Identify what the problem is and then do a little problem solving.
Yeah. And part of that is to do that without getting overwhelmed. Right. Just a little at a time. Yeah.
Right.
Great, Richard. I've got a couple more hands. So let me call the other people whose hands are up. And if you have another question, I bet there'll be time for it. Ginger, you had a question or comment?
Yes, I do. And if this doesn't fit in with your New Year launch pitch, that's fine.
No, this is wide open. I'll mention launch if it's relevant, but wide open for questions at this point.
Great. You know, you mentioned, you were talking about setting aside 3 hours for your book every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered, one problem that I have that I don't know if is, I would love your take on this because it could be a phony problem, could be something else. But I have the, when I start to do something, I say, I really want to do this, but you know, maybe some other things that I really have to do, I'll forget. Because once I hone in on something, I'm an 8-hour guy. So it's actually, I'm stopping myself. I'm doing a lot of the stuff that I want to do. Because I feel like, oh gosh, I'm going to forget this or not do this or something, all this stuff that feels mandatory. Mm-hmm. Do you have some suggestions for that?
Yeah, a couple things. Well, one thing is, you know, David Allen has a really interesting concept. He calls it a trusted system. You need a trusted system for knowing what needs to get done today or, you know, get your taxes done or whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
So that you can ignore all that stuff and just concentrate on your work. Because otherwise, if you're trying to remember all those other things you need to do,
exactly,
you will have difficulty concentrating on your work. So I don't know exactly what your trusted system needs to look like, Ginger, but I bet with just that idea, you could like make a list of the things that have got to get done today and put it to the side and just the ones for today, you know. And that list actually should be 6 or under, not 7 or under. And then give yourself freedom to go work on this thing. Now, the other thing that I think I'm hearing here is that when you get working on something, you dive all in your 8 hours on it. And you just go until it sounds like you go until you bust. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, because if it's interesting, I don't stop.
Right. So this is something. So first of all, this is really good because if you have that much passion about what you're doing, you have a tremendous power for then putting this under more management because you enjoy doing it. So that is fantastic. What probably it needs is a little bit more direction associated with it. So you probably need to sit back and say, well, like give me an example of one of these things that you... What would be an example of something you wind up putting 8 hours at a time in?
Oh, let's see. Oh, gosh. An example would be going through my genealogy, which I really want to start, but okay. I really can't yet. The other thing would be the studying I'm doing.
Okay, great.
Which I'm really enjoying.
Now, it sounds like right now you are doing the studying, but you're not doing the genealogy. Am I getting that right?
I am. Yes,
okay,
that's
so
right.
Let's take the studying then, just as the less okay. controversial case.
Okay.
How much time do you think would be good to spend each day studying?
Including the reading.
Yeah.
I think for integration, it needs 3 hours at least a day.
Okay. And you think that if you did 3 hours every day, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And you know that once you get going, you can do 8 hours. So here, the issue is not going to be, once you get started, you're going to get into it. The issue is going to be making sure that you cut off and you build in a manufacturer's finishing point for it. And that's something that can be done. And you can kind of let yourself down at the end of it. And what I would do is you have a startup, and part of your startup will be, you'll carve out what do you think you can do in the 3 hours? And how are you going to wind down at the end of the 3 hours?
You mean limit your expectations on that day, for that day.
Limit, yes. And set it up as a routine where literally every day you do that. I mean, that's what I do with my writing. I have a whole process. And I have worked more. I had a period, I actually figured out I could do 6 hours at a time. But if I do 6 hours at a time, I can't do anything. I mean, I can't do anything else. I am just completely wiped. I can't do anything. And if I do like 3 or 4 days of 6 hours, I can't do anything else the whole week. So it doesn't work for me to do 6 hours at a time. And it sounds like it doesn't work for you to do 8 hours at a time.
No. Well,
right. So this is a great example of how you bring in a wider context of value. So you want to have some balance in your life. You really want to do this. You're passionate about it, but you also want some balance. You want to have like daily life stuff go fairly easily, right? Am I getting that right?
I just have such a multitude of things to do that I'm afraid of dropping the ball.
So just taking this one, you want this to be balanced by other things. And so that is what motivates you to then put boundaries on this to give you then the freedom to do the other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the boundaries. I like maybe just when I first start each day, say, I'm going to get this done, this specific thing done, and make it within the 3 hours. Okay,
right.
Good.
And,
thanks.
And the article that came out Sunday is on this exact topic. And it looks like the first class in January in the Thinking Lab is going to be on this topic.
So,
there's more to be said on this topic.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Ginger. Steph, did you have a question?
Yeah, I wanted your thoughts on one of my and list items that I didn't read before.
Okay.
I am trying to find a way to get out of doing the book.
Okay.
That was really the only negative one I had, because I was able to articulate positives, but what tactic should I use to dive into that and unpack it for myself?
Right. Well, the first thing I would do is just a kind of a sanity check. Do you think there's any truth in that at all?
A little bit. So it worries me that's why it's a little irrational, because the project itself, I love the idea. I have a lot to say. Well, get me started. Can't shut me up. But why do I have that thought?
Well, so I think the thing I would say is, I mean, it's worth finding out if you actually don't want to do this. That is definitely worth finding out if you don't want to do this. And I tend to be kind of snarky in my and list to myself. you want to try to see, does that actually resonate? This idea of I'm trying to get out of it. And if you have a kind of resonance with that, I think I'm trying to get out of that. That is a huge warning bell that, you know, there's some preconception that you should do this, and you're just getting this little teeny thing. I think I'm trying to get out of this. And if that sounds right, I would definitely go look at that and say, well, why did I want to do this? And who says I need to do this? And you might actually want to, use a more in-depth tactic, like I'm thinking, Steph is in the thinking lab too. Judge your neighbor might be helpful for that. But on the other hand, if the other way that this could come up is people can sometimes armchair psychologize themselves, right? And they say, you know, I'm looking at you're avoiding this. Oh, you're trying, I'm not doing it. You're trying to avoid this. What's wrong with you? You're trying to avoid this. And so if it's the voice of someone sitting in an armchair and looking at your behavior and trying to guess what your motivation is, that I would throw out the window. Hmm. So the test here is, do you have a genuine feeling about that? Or is this just an intellectual, because you know, I mean, does everybody know what psychologizing is? Psychologizing is when you try to explain a person's behavior by jumping to conclusions about what's going on with them psychologically. And it's usually either to excuse their behavior or to, it can either be to excuse misbehavior or to damn good behavior, right? Or I didn't get that quite right. It can be, it's always used in a distorting way. And I'm not saying you're doing this, Steph, but it's a very common thing in the culture for people to jump to conclusions about what's going on, you know, in someone's motivation for doing what they're doing just based on the action. And so it could easily be something that the thought could occur to you just because you recognize that that's the thought that would occur out in the culture. Oh, if I'm not doing it, then I'm trying to get I'm trying to avoid it, or I don't really want it, or whatever. I could imagine armchair people sitting in their armchair and jumping to those conclusions. And so you want to make sure the test for you of whether there's a value for you is your emotional reaction. That is the test. Hmm. Is that helpful?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I would not assume all kinds of stuff. You know, this is one of the great things about doing a thinking on paper or a analyst type thing where you put it on paper. You're just recording the thoughts, and then you can look back and say, that makes no sense whatsoever. That's nuts. Or, oh, huh, you know, that resonates. That's kind of surprising. What's that about? And either way, you learn something. One way you got rid of some garbage, and the other way you found out something about yourself. Both of those are good.
Yeah. Okay. There's more work to do on it, but I feel these are helping me to find out what's going on.
Okay, good.
There's something obviously going on.
Okay, could be.
Good, thank you.
All right, great. Okay. Any other questions? Tom, hey Tom, nice to see you.
I have to unmute myself, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, nice to see you again. Yeah, you mentioned something a while ago when they're talking about the motivation by values instead of motivation by threats.
Mm-hmm.
And the phrase you used was deepen the value.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to understand that a little bit better. I don't know if you have time to go into that much, but that seems to be where I get stuck doing that. Every time I try to focus on the values when I'm being motivated by a threat, I feel like I'm just rationalizing.
Okay. So I'm not saying this is a trivially easy thing to do. So there are two things. One is this thing that I was mentioning to Steph. There is getting genuinely in touch with the values is a skill that you can develop. And the a thing that helps with it is there's this list of deep rational values that I talk about actually in the freebie, the Thinking Direction Starter Kit. Learning how to notice which ones of those are really singing to you at a certain time. Like for me, it turns out that predictability, which is a deep rational value, this is something that I am really eager for. And I'm actually using my desire for predictability to help me put boundaries on work and do other things. It's like, it's this background deep issue that I'm using to help color my reasons for doing a lot of concrete actions. And so the general way that you deepen the motivation is by understanding deeper values and seeing how it connects to a very concrete situation. So if you have an example, I might be able to help you with that. Do you have an example of something where you tried focusing on the values but didn't work?
Yeah, I guess the one I was talking about before you got here. You know, I have, when I moved into this place years ago, not, you know, maybe 4 years ago, I got a bunch of stuff in the garage and boxes that I need to go through that and unpack them and get rid of the junk I don't need, donate stuff. It's still good. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like every day I think about doing it. And that's actually what I was doing my and list about.
Okay.
But the problem is I don't schedule time. I have things to do until like Saturday afternoon. So, but that's a divergence, I guess, from what I'm talking about.
That's all right. But why? Yeah. You say you need to go through it. Who says you need to? Why? Well, how do you benefit from it?
My son is threatening to move in with me, and I need to make the room for his car.
Okay, but, so what's the...
But it's not
hold on. Is your son moving in with you a positive? And maybe you don't have to answer that out loud.
Well, that's not actually... But the problem... One problem with that is that it's not a certainty. You know, he's been interviewing for work, and he had one in my town. And then that fell through, but he might get another one.
Right. So. But you see that this is described in terms of, well, I got to get these boxes out of here because otherwise he won't have any place to park the car.
Right.
This is described in terms of negatives. Now, if you said, you know what, I'm just going to make something up here. It's not going to be totally plausible, but, you know, he seems, I would really love it if he would move in with me. It would be great to have him in this house. You know what? I want to show him how much I want it here. I'm going to clear this space for the car and show it to him. And that you would then actually use, like, thinking about how great it would be, you know, if this were the case, right? And that might motivate you to, yeah, let me clear this out. And I can clear this room and I could make this room nice for him and, you know, whatever. And you would get, and you would be doing it to show him how much you want to have him in your life. And even if he didn't move in, maybe he'd visit more often. And I'm just making this up. But you see, if what you wanted was your son in your life more, that would give you a reason for doing a lot of things. Now, let's see if we can find, forget the son, because maybe he's not coming and maybe it's not the top thing. Before this came up, you still wanted to get those boxes out of there, but why? Give me two more reasons for why you might want to get the boxes out of there.
I could set up the ping pong table.
You could play ping pong. Do you like to play ping pong?
Well, I do if I find someone to play with. I mean, that's my son and I used to play when we were living together, but
okay,
it's just sitting against the wall right now.
Okay. All right. So
you want two, or is that enough?
Yeah. Give me one more.
Mm-hmm. I hate having to go out in the garage and dig through all those boxes to find the one thing that I want.
Okay. So now we've gotten to something that's directly related to the boxes, right? As opposed to the boxes just being in the way of something. You'd really like to have your things about you.
Right? Yeah, I'd like to know where things are. Yeah.
You'd like to know where things are.
Yeah.
And so tell me about that. Why would you like to know where things are? Why do you like that?
Saves me a lot of time.
So it saves time. What
and
else?
There's things that I have that I know are in one of those boxes that I keep thinking I'd want to go get, you know, like a certain book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just think about how much time that'll take.
Yeah.
And I give up on it.
Right.
And sometimes I've actually bought another copy.
Right. So one thing is it would just make a lot of things. It would be ease in the house. Right.
Right.
Another thing is, I think you said some of that stuff needs to be thrown away. Is that right?
Yes, some of it needs, well, donated. Most of it needs to be donated.
Okay, donated. Sorry for saying that. Yeah, but yeah.
Well, I said both.
Okay, all right, great. So, and what's the benefit of donating that stuff?
I would have less stuff to deal with. You know.
So again, so this is absence of stuff. Let's see what I think the positive is something like spaciousness, right?
Okay.
So like you have this space in the garage, you could choose, maybe you'd do the pool table, maybe your son, maybe you would Maybe you would play hopscotch there. I don't know what you would do. So far we haven't gotten something super compelling, but why is it in the background as, oh, I need to do this?
Well, it's because I've been wanting to do it ever since I moved in, and I never do. You know,
so there's like, also something of like, so I'm going to make up some things that may be related to this. There may be an integrity thing, right? If I said I was going to do it and I want to do it and that matters to me. Or there could be a thing like, you know, part of making this place my home is getting all my things in the right place. And I would really like to finish making this place my home. I feel like I feel like a transient because I still have all these boxes. I have a cousin who moved, her parents moved, almost every year when she was a child. And they weren't in the army and they weren't in the military. And when she became an adult, she realized she hated the sight of cardboard boxes. And she made a point of unpacking. But you could also have, you know, this could be like, do you love your home?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'd say I'd love it, but I'm very satisfied. It's one of the best places I've lived. Let me put it that way.
Okay, great. So you see, this is also something you could say, like, I'm just looking around. I don't see any pictures on your wall there. Are some of the things in the boxes pictures and things that you would put on the wall?
Yep.
So you like your home. You could make your home perfect if you would go through those boxes with the goal of, I'm going to finish making my home perfect. That actually might be something that would really motivate you to go through the, and it might help you decide the other thing that this is when you get, figure out what the deeper value is. It also helps you prioritize. Like, suppose I'm just making this up, just trying to concretize here, Tom. But if it was, hey, I want to get the beautiful things out of the boxes onto the walls, that would help you say, well, why don't I pick the ones, like, first let me do my study. I think these ones would be most relevant to that. Let me go through these boxes and get the study beautiful. And then, you know, then maybe it's the living room or whatever it is. But that would help you if you had an idea of what I want was beauty or spaciousness or ease or organization in the house. That would then help you prioritize. And then it wouldn't be quite so daunting because you would do like the five boxes that are relative to this room or the five boxes relative to this. And you'd have a reason for going through those boxes. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It kind of brings you back to my first point is, how much do I really want to make my home perfect? How do I deepen that value of making my home perfect? I mean, I think you gave me some hints at the beginning about, is this, do you really like your home? And I do. So how do I deepen that value?
Right. So this is the chicken and the egg issue, right? So you can intellectually decide, you know what, I really like this home and I want to make this a bigger value. And the way you deepen it is by acting again and keep that value. And so you say, you know, I'm going to make this home a treasure. Part of how I'm going to do this is by unpacking these boxes and using what's in these boxes to make this home great. And the way that you strengthen a value is by acting to gain and keep it. And so part of it is you intellectually say, this is a direction I want to go. This is important to me. And I can see that this would be a big source of value. And then you concretely, you use that to help you then concretely take steps. And the taking of the steps, it does build, create a virtuous cycle that then, in fact, by the time you've done this, you're actually really delighted with your home. Good?
Yep, that's good. Thanks.
Okay, great. Terrific. Hey, Carl. Nice to see you, too.
Here. There you go. I've just unmuted.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm definitely going to be signing up for the start in January. Got a project I've worked on
Fantastic.
The last 4 years, taking psychology and laying it over philosophy and then coming back to what we think in psychology. But it's going to be purely a polemical attack. It's just going to be an attack. It's going to be a I don't want to say sarcasm is the dominant, but it is a drawing attention. The goal is to raise the awareness that if somebody Googles, is religion child abuse / epistemology / what do we know about child development / the question, how often should you lie to your children while they're zero to eight? The Jesuit boast, you know, give me the child till the age of seven and I'll show you the man. So psychology's out on child development, zero to 25 is generally all the schools. But the values that I've been wrestling with is that all my loved ones, I was raised religious. This is my story. I can tell it. But I also know from psychology that I'm triggering to the most violent extent, I'll say. And it's bringing up the issue that a parent abused a child or didn't, the mind of the child wasn't developed properly. And now the parent sees the, what Daniel Dennett, Richard Dawkins, belief in belief. So the parent sees the child's taken the belief in belief, faith, but now they don't believe what the parents believe. They believe in
something else.
You know, their Taurus sign rising, but.
So hold on a second. I'm not quite tracking this, Carl, because you started saying this was going to be polemical. Can you tell me what it sounded like you were about to get to what your question is, but I may need to get you to backtrack once you say that.
Yeah, it's going to be a website. I learned a couple of tricks from Mark Cuban. I think I can get some press and learn how to raise a little hell. And I've also been in sales, so raising money for the idea. But my value at stake that I did thinking on paper with the PDF that y'all sent today. Mm-hmm. Thank you again. And all the past classes on thinking on paper. I do that all mm-hmm. the time. Mm-hmm. But I see that the value is that my central purpose is to live. I'm 63, so live the best I can in my retirement, into my life, however long that is. But the value at attack is that how much people will hate me and want to cause me
okay.
harm.
Okay. So you're worried about that, obviously.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So now we're getting clear. So this is an example. This is a potential threat. So if you put a super controversial website up, you are worried that you're going to be attacked or literally harmed or something like that.
Yes.
Okay. So all of this is not a crazy concern, right? This is, correct. You know, in the present cultural state, that could be possible.
Yeah.
I mean, we had someone, you know what, I'm not going to say it, but we had someone with a wildly controversial goal in the last launch, similar thing, and had similar concerns. I think what's really important is to start by figuring out the value you're after. So you said this is purely polemical, like you want to have, see how, you know, religion is hurting kids' minds or whatever, and you know, it's all about what's wrong. I absolutely believe that you will not get anywhere until you understand what the positive is you're trying to achieve. And once you know the positive you want to achieve, you will also be able to see ways to make ways to protect yourself, and also to the extent that you don't want to protect yourself, because that's the other thing that could come up. Yet a third person who has a fairly controversial point of view has concluded that she needs to cut a little bit, this is not the great word for it, but out of the closet, that she actually probably does need to be a little bit of a public figure in this. And she's gotten her head around doing that. Now, in her case, I don't think she's expecting, you know, physical harm. But the first thing you need to do, Carl, is to write down all of this stuff that you want to do that's polemical, and then really understand what is the value you're after in every bit of it, because that is what is going to help you figure out how to make this add up to something that makes the quality of your life from here on in fantastic, and makes it also, I have a sense that you're channeling some anger here, that you want to make a change, channeling anger. And I think, and I have that too, right? I'm on a mission. I'm on a mission to undo the damage of progressive education. Well, in order to really make progress on that, I have had to figure out how to turn that to be completely creative. And I'll tell you what my central purpose now is, it's to teach adults how to think clearly and logically about value-laden issues so that they can be happy and productive. And that is entirely positive. I can tell that to anyone, and I can see where it goes. And I'll tell you, in your case, really important that we need to get this. You need to understand what the positive is you're after, because that is where all that anger is going to be able to turn towards something that is creative and will actually help solve the problem. And I deeply believe that, Carl. I deeply believe that.
Thanks. I'm super excited about it. I think I've thought about a lot of the issues that you brought up right there. I'm super, super excited about it.
Okay, great, Carl. All right. I look forward to working with you.
Me too.
Okay, fantastic. All right, Richard, you have another question.
Yes. Okay, on your, I guess, your major point number three, use emotional resilience, not pressure, to take a step despite contrary motivation. If you can, I'll appreciate it if you can take me through some of that again, because when you did the first bullet, don't just do it. Don't use that as your instruction to yourself. My mind went off off completely. Is it, oh, you have to do that sometimes? Okay. And,
well,
and then, here's just an example. The dishes need to be done. It's late in the evening. I'm a little weary. The dishes need to be done. Anyways, you know.
All right. So here is the basic answer to this question.
Yeah. Yeah.
You always have a choice. You always have a choice. Now, you may not like your choices. So you may, so like for the dishes, right? So here's three choices, right? You could do the dishes. You could throw the dishes in the trash. You do the dishes later. You don't like throw the dishes in the trash, probably. You probably don't like that choice. You also might not like do the dishes later, because it means tomorrow morning when you get up, there'll be smelly, dirty things in the sink. But you do have a choice. And in the Do What Matters Most course, which actually I make everyone in launch go through Do What Matters Most if they haven't. In the first unit, there's a tactic called decision cards for taking something, for looking at your choice and translating it all into values. Because, for example, it may be that at this moment, sleep is more important than having a clean kitchen tomorrow morning. And you really do have, and so part of what is needed is to be able to take control and see in terms of values and not feel that you can't think about it, right? Because the thing that kills you is saying, well, I have no choice. And now it doesn't matter that I'm tired. It doesn't matter that, I'd rather not do this. It doesn't matter that, you know, X, Y, Z, I have to do this. Well, that is not an appropriate way to deal with your own mind.
Okay.
It's not appropriate for a parent to do it with a child. It's not appropriate for you to do it with your own mind.
Okay. More important to me than that my mind went elsewhere on chose to do it is that while my mind was elsewhere, I wasn't getting anything of the second, third, and fourth bullets. If you can do anything further on that.
You mean, are you talking specifically about, you mean in the handout?
Yeah.
Right. All right. So
it's a review. Please review is what I'm saying.
Right. Okay, great. Sure. So the reason that you're having pressure is because you're trying to block things out to save yourself from overload or emotional overwhelm or something. You need an alternative to that, right? You need something other than block it out. And that is a skill, which takes, let me just stop this noise from happening. That is a learnable skill. It basically requires introspection. You need to be able to name the values at stake. You need to be able to, so that you can ground yourself emotionally. You may need to relax your body a little bit. I mean, literally tensing up is something that makes it harder to think straight. And So that's the poise and the clear-headedness. And then the third part, the poise and the grounded, clear-headed is you need to have a small enough number of things in your head that you can think about them. You have to reduce the crow overload. And that's like put it on paper. So there are very specific things you can do. At that moment when your inclination is to just use pressure to keep stuff out of your head, you need to have a whole bunch of tools in your toolbox about how to calm down, focus, maybe step back so you can have fewer things in mind. And then you're back in the driver's seat. And by doing it that way, instead of with pressure, you can actually access the information that would have been cut out. If you pressure yourself, you cut out information. If you don't pressure yourself, you have access to that information and you can make an intelligent decision. Now, the ultimate thing to take a step despite contrary motivation, I think there's a book title, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. That's ultimately what you're trying to do is you can be uncomfortable, you can be scared, you can be nervous, and yet you can say, well, but this is a good thing to do. And even though I'm nervous, I'm taking this step. And you're not trying to prevent yourself. It's you're willing to take the step despite not having, you know, a zeal to do it, if you know what I mean. And you do that from a very poised, clear-headed place.
Okay. What I'm hearing is, and correct me where I err, what you're saying to me is pressuring yourself will not be effective.
Right.
Rather than pressuring yourself, you should, you fill in the blank, I have a word in mind.
So it's you need to get your mind back functioning, even though.
What I was going to say.
Well, introspection is part. Introspection helps you get emotionally grounded.
Okay.
So that's one. So I'd say that it's poised, grounded, and clear-headed. That's what you need. You need all three of them. Okay. Poised meaning literally, if you're tense, you are blocking out awareness. So you
better
need to
rather than I'll try this. Rather than pressure yourself, better to take some breaths, get up, do some stretches. Better than pressure. Clear your head.
Yeah. So I think there's right. So that's all on the poise, like the physical poise part, which is great. Okay. It's not one thing, right? So pressure is a short circuiting of the whole, you know, you just short circuit and try to like get tunnel vision and just focus on what you need to do. And it's one of the reasons people do this, they just block it out, is because that's a very simple thing. You can remember, you just do it. Just block it out. Just do it. Well, the actual answer to that is much more nuanced, and you need to kind of step back, make sure your brain is in gear, which is not a unilateral, it's not just one thing. I mean, to come into focus, to be in focus is not something that is something that requires awareness. Situational awareness, the actual concrete things that you do to get back into focus and into the driver's seat is different in different situations. And the three elements of it are the poise, the clear-headedness, and the emotional groundedness. And that's why the key thing that you need is the skill that people don't tend to have is emotional resilience, which is the ability to say, oh, yeah, I freaked out, or oh, I'm overloaded, oh, God, I'm so tense, and then say, pause. Okay, step back. Okay, rewind the tape. Let's take a new look at this. That is a skill. It's a learnable skill with a lot of different aspects to it. Is that clear?
Yes, I think so. Identify the problem rather than simply trying to pressure through it. For example, identify the overload.
That would be part of it. So, but the general point is, you need a functional mind. And if you're using pressure, you've actually reduced the functioning of your mind. Right? You want to have your full operational intelligence if you're in a difficult situation. And pressure actually reduces your operational intelligence. So you're going to need to step back and use all of your resources. And that is a creative process.
I'll take that away and think about it. I won't pressure myself to resolve this.
Understand it. Exactly. Great. All right, terrific. Well, we have gone till 5 o'clock, and I noticed there's a question in the chat there. The recording will come out later tonight. That will be available. And I thank you guys. It's been really fun. Lots of great questions, lots of interesting issues that you brought up. Those of you, thank you for staying to the bitter end, some of you. I think we will draw a line here. And I look forward to seeing you on another call or in a program. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was very helpful.
Thanks. All right, great. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.